Okay, we're taping. Today is October 31st. 30th, yeah. And we're doing Great Biblical Personalities. And we saw Shimshon Raphael Hirsch in his very, very realistic approach towards the raising of Yaakov and Esav, which I'd like to open up to Bereishis shortly. We did the Michta of Meliyahu's approach. That's page 22 and 23. Verses 73, 74, 75, 76, where, I mean, it's in Hebrew here, but this has now been translated in a sefer called Strive for Truth. And he talks about reaching perfection by us reading the storylines of the Avos. He is well aware that there are some questionable things that they do in Sefer Bereishis. And he says that it is, in each case, it's not just a question of like what Rashi and Bechor Shor tend to do to justify what they did. He's well aware, Rav Dessler, that Bereishis Rabbah is quite critical. Rashi, Bechor Shor, Ibn Ezra, right, were always trying to justify the things they did. How can you square these ideas? So the answer is that depends on your agenda, depends on what you're trying to accomplish with the text. Everything that we do, or that Avi Yitzchak and Yaakov did, has a cheshbon. Cheshbon is, I'm in danger, I have to come up with something, some plan about how to survive this trip to Egypt or Philistia. If I do this, these are the consequences. If I do that, these are the consequences. Is it okay for us to second guess these actions and say, no, Yaakov, you know what you should have done? You should have stood up to your mother and say, Mom, there's one of two choices that I see here. One is that I'm supposed to get this blessing, like you're telling me, right? And one that I'm not supposed to get this blessing, right? I don't mean to contradict you, but if I'm not supposed to get this blessing, I certainly don't want to get it through subterfuge. And if I'm supposed to get this blessing, I'll get it come what may. I do. I'm supposed to get this blessing. Right? So if I'm supposed to get it, it's inconceivable that I'm supposed to get it through subterfuge. It'll come to me somehow. Right? I remember on the Shabbos table asking this question of my kids. My oldest was about 10 or 11. And they came, after much discussion, they came up with, if Yaakov had said that to his mother, Esav would have been killed that day by a wild animal trying to catch him. Because Yaakov, you're getting this, bracha. Stand firm and say, I'm not doing it this way. Mom, you're right. Rabbi Avot Sahir, I bought it from him. It's mine. You're right. Right? So Bechor Shor just says, Yaakov was chozer al avedoso. Right? You left a wallet on the table there. It's yours. Right? You didn't give up Yush. And you're running after him. Someone beats you to it. I'm going to push you out of the way. That's my wallet. What do you think you're doing? Right? So. But the point is that everything we do has this cheshbon one way or the other, and we have to balance what we do. See, very easy to be, you know, a second guess and be a Monday morning quarterback, but they're in the trench right now, and they got to come up with a plan. Go to Egypt with his food, or stay here and possibly starve. How can I starve? God just told me to come here. What's the point? Right? Come here to starve right away after being told I'm going to be a great nation? Yeah? All right, but you make that judgment if you're hungry and everyone's crying and everyone's complaining and you know, I'm ready to assume that Sarah was right on board with him. But what if Sarah was you know, Avram, you know, this is a tough trip to begin with. But I tell you, I've been eating in days and it's getting crazy. I see people dying around. I mean, what's going on? Right? So, you know, so what's the plan? Depends how you read the text. Rashi says he passed the test. He didn't complain. Ramban said, no, the test is not whether you're going to complain. The test is whether you're going to leave. Alright? I wouldn't know that complaint to God. Right? So, okay. So that's what Rabbi Lozada does. Okay? Now, if you look at Rav Aaron Cutler, I have to tell you that of all these commentaries, he stresses reliance on Chazal 24. You see what I wrote there? He surely saw that Chazal questioned Masa Avos. Right? He just says that the Avos didn't commit sins by our standards, but they were responsible for failures of perfection. Right? I have a quote from his Sefer Mishnas, Rabbi Aharon. Yesh lahadgish ki b'chol zos yesh kan chata'im lefi odam kedushasa. That there are sins based on their holiness. In other words, you and I maybe wouldn't be judged for doing this, but hey, this is Yaakov, you know. Right? You and I would have behaved this way before Esav, because we are of not such great faith. But Yaakov, for subduing himself before Esav and prostrating himself the way he did, is a breach of faith. We talked before about the Mefarshim, who said it wasn't a breach of faith, it was no preponderance of humility. Fine, I understand. That's how some deal with it. But Rav Aaron Cutler, who was the Mishnas Aharon in he was the Rosh Yeshiva in the Lakewood Yeshiva, he was very vehement that we should try as much as possible to read everything as positive as possible in the actions of Sefer Bereishis. Okay, two questions, yes?
You say Yaakov back to Esav.
In Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov excessively submits to Esav, even though God had just promised him, I'm going to bring you back to your land, I'm going to be with you, you're going to be a great nation. So why would you think that after getting that promise that your brother's going to kill you?
I mean, but couldn't it be like, because Esav's his older brother, does the commentary say like that he bad man him out of respect for just... for Kibud Av, because it's considered your older brothers.
There's no question, if you read the beginning of Vayishlach, Yaakov has one objective in the beginning of Vayishlach. Tell it to me, what is it?
Stay alive.
I mean, by stay alive by doing what?
Submitting to Esav. Submitting to Esav.
And by convincing him that... let's go earlier. Why might Esav still, after all these years, want to kill him?
It was not worth it.
Right, that the brothers hasn't done me anything. It's so obvious. Kachna is Birchasi Asher Huvas Lachi. All along, the text calls it a mincha, but when he gives it to him, he says, take this bracha, it's yours. Right? So he's trying to convince him very clearly, it's very obvious, that what I took from you, you should feel bad now, because that obviously hasn't come true. It hasn't done me any good. So it turns out that it seems from the text that Esav long ago forgot about this. And then we have to wonder, so why didn't Rivka call back for him? So the fact that Rivka doesn't call him and say, your brother cooled off, let's come home, is... he couldn't come home within 7 years, I understand, maybe even 14 years, because he had a contract with his father-in-law.
That's already fair.
Right? So that's... There are Mephoshim, I will tell you this, it seems to be Rashi, who says, no, that Esav did have nefarious intent for Yaakov. He came out with those 400 men to actually kill him. But Hashem didn't let him. And those are those teeth marks on top of the word Vayishakeyu. Those dots on top of the word Vayishakeyu. That's really, to me, it's a little unfair. Because Esav seems quite magnanimous there. And what Esav does, according to Ramban, according to Bechor Shor, according to Abravanel, Esav keeps his promise of the soul. According to the Brahmanella, what the soul that Shaddala makes hay with this, and he picks it up and he really runs with it, is that what was sold was the land of Israel. Give me your Bechorah. What's your Bechorah? The land of Israel. That's what God promised Abraham. They were well aware of this. I mean, did you ever ask this question? Did Yaakov ever tell his father, I bought this from Esav when he was younger? Did he ever tell his mother? Right?
Supposedly,
I think, look, when Esav complains to his father, listen to this pasuk. Hachi karashmo Yaakov, vayakveni zefa amayim, es bechor silokach, vihine atolokach berfasi. He talks about taking it. He didn't take it, he bought it. Right? So he says, first he took my firstborn right. Did Yitzchak think of saying, what are you talking about? Shaddal says Yitzchak knew that. He knew what was purchased back then. And he shows from the Bracha, although I'm not sure if this proof is so clear, is that when Yaakov comes in, he says, Anochi Esav Bechorecha, Osisi Kasher Dibartei. You shouldn't have said that. Why did he have to add the word before there? You're speaking, Yaakov. You're in control. What do you have to say, Anochi Esav B'charecha? Just say, Anochi Esav. I'm not your Bechor. I sold it when I was younger. Right? The Bechor, according to Abravanel, is the land of Israel. That's your birthright. Okay? Now, how do I know this? Because when Yitzchok blesses Yaakov at the end of the parasha, he mentions, listen to this pasuk carefully, V'yitzen l'cho es birkas Abraham. L'cho u'zarecho itoch, v'rishlecho es eretz migurecho, asher nasana l'kim Avraham. I don't need to translate, right? He mentions Avraham twice, he mentions the land of Israel. Now listen to the bracha that Yaakov took from Esau. A bracha that Yitzchok may feel is coming to Esau, who's been putting food on the table his whole life. While Yaakov is sitting at home. Right? V'yitzen l'cho elokim mital ha-shemayim mishmane ha-oretz. Rov dedan desirosh. Yavducha min mishtachavu l'cho l'umim. Hevei nivir l'achacha mishtachavu l'cho b'nei necha. Orech ha-ru v'archacha v'ruch. He mentions nothing spiritual, nothing but the land of Israel, nothing but Abraham. It could be argued that Yitzchak was hoping for some kind of Zvulun and Yisachar kind of relationship. He knew who was whom, he knew who Yaakov was, he knew who Esav was. And I have to tell you, this is decidedly not Rashi, because Rashi said that Yitzchak just fooled him. Right? One pair of Shemashis. This is to say that Yitzchak was quite well aware of what was going on. We might still be have a bit of an objection, we can open up Rashi shortly, and say, what kind of reason is to favor your son? But yeah, how do Yitzchak say so? Kitzayim your faith. Right? That's a reason to love your son. The Das HaKadosh and the Bala Turim say that was a bribe. What does a bribe do to you, the Torah says?
Makes you blind.
Or blinds you. But he's a king, he's talk, but it's a feminine of Neros. It blinded him to the truth about what the two sons are about. That's Rashi's approach. Okay? Bala Turim, the Das HaKadosh, it's Rashi's general approach. What I'm saying now is that Yitzchak wasn't as blind as they make him out to be. He might have been physically blind, he couldn't see sense data, but he was not so blind about his two sons. I think Rashi at one point actually contradicts himself. But Rashi's point there was not so much to discuss what caused Yitzchak and Rivka to favor different children. But remember later when Yaakov comes in the room and he says, Vayomer Ovi. Yaakov comes in and just says, Father! Why do you think he just said one word? When Esav comes in, he starts talking. I'm here. Here I am. I can use me the cookie for food. But Yaakov's opening line was, Avi, my father. Think of it. Why did he just say one word when he walks in?
He wanted to try not to lie. Like, he didn't want to say too many things.
He's testing something. Yes. He's testing. Remember, twins often sound alike, but, you know, their voice, right? I'm not even my brother's twin, and we don't even look anything like brothers. And when we talk on the phone, we should always convince our parents that we're the other. Right? So you tend to sound a little alike. Certainly. Twins. Right? Even not identical. So Amisa, Yaakov comes in to test, because a man who's blind might have an acute sense of hearing. And he says, Ovi, to test something. What's the test?
He's going to recognize me.
So he first starts saying, Mi atovani, who are you, my son? What is the nature of that question? Who are you, my son?
Well, what are you doing? What do you want?
No, but what is he thinking? What does Yaakov think his father's thinking by saying, who are you?
Are you Esau? Are you Esau, really?
Obviously, I have only two sons, so, but... I mean, I told my son to go out and get me some food, and it seems to me that he's coming back much earlier than usual. The food was right there. I don't know how long it took to prepare it all, but he might be thinking, is it Yaakov who's coming in to ask me something, which is perfectly legitimate, or is it Esau who brought back the food much more quickly than usual, which I'd be very happy with. So Mia Tabani is not any question of a possible nefarious activity. But Yaakov basically passes the test. Because by saying Mia Tabani, he can possibly be convinced that it's Esav. Right?
But if Yitzchak had said, this is Shaddai talking, it's interesting. He said, if Yitzchak says that to respond to Avi, and he would say, oh, Yaakov, hi, how you doing? Glad to see you. I haven't seen you in a while. Then it's all the bets are off. Don't let him touch you. Don't let him see. Just come in and ask a question and go out and tell mommy, mom, it didn't work. The minute I walked in, I knew I was Yaakov. So just say very little. In fact, his opening word is Avi. His closing word, when Yitzchak tells him, Vayomer atah zebedi Esav. You are my son, right? Because when you doubt something, you're again pressing. These are the things I think that it is Esav. These are the things that. But when he felt the garment, smelled the smell of the field, right? He said to himself, there's no way this could be Yaakov. There's no way on planet Earth that Yaakov could come up with this. Right? So here is, and I remember I just told you before, that Rashi was of the opinion that Yitzchak was fooled by Esav, right? So Rashi gives two opinions. And the pasuk by Ehav Yitzchak is said Kitzayin Befiv. Tell me two things that this can mean. He loved Yitzchak loved Esav, Kitzayin Befiv.
Thanks to his mouth. Right.
So Rashi says two opinions. One, Befiv Shel Yitzchak, which would mean, translate the words then.
He put food in his mouth.
He put food in his mouth. Strange way to say it, but okay. Kitzayin Befiv. He put food in Yitzchak's mouth.
Or he trapped Yitzchak.
Hunted wonderful food.
Or he trapped Yitzchak with his mouth.
Or he trapped Yitzchak, Befiv Shel Esav. Kitzayin Befiv. An expression that Rashi used regarding Nimrod, by the way. So that one shall adam befiv. Rashi writes back in Parshas Noach.
I have a question about Rabbi Aaron Cutler's his opinion. It seems that it defeats the whole purpose of analyzing them because, yeah, it's perfection, but because we're on such a high level, it doesn't relate to us so much because they're so early.
I have that fear. Yeah. I have that fear. Careful. You're right. I'm not going to be critical of his whole worldview, but that's what you get in Lakewood, okay? Mm-hmm. But be careful because when you press someone too hard, then you'll teach them the story about Sheva, and they'll say, "But if David did nothing wrong, why did the prophet tell him you sinned?" Right? I'd say that there is some probably possible cause for concern when you read that way. Okay? So, but I'm going to take you in just a minute. According to the one that says, Befiv shall Yitzchak, right? He just put food in his mouth. But he knew who he was. He wasn't fooled. Right? Because later in the story, when Yitzchak comes in and says, Kumna Shiva. Right? Kumna Shiva. Rashi says, oh, that's not Esav. Esav never uses the word Yah. Didn't say please. This must be Yaakov. And then he says, Ki yikra Hashem Elokecha lefanai. God hastened my footsteps. And he says, oh, that's not Esav. Esav would never say that.
Well, maybe in this case, Yitzchak was convinced that God deserved it.
So that's what pressed the doubt in his mind. A few drushes on this, right now. I do want to get to you, but it'll sidetrack us for a moment. Is that what Rashi's saying is a beautiful thought, is that you need both of these to really cement the idea of it being Yaakov. It's interesting because Yaakov is trying very much to give all the senses that he's Esav. He's trying to smell like Esav. He's trying to sound like Esav. He's trying to feel like Esav. Right? Right? But he can't talk like Esav. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I once gave a drush on this on a Shabbos morning. Is that we are sometimes forced to wear big day Esav. What is the function of wearing big day Esav? Is that, I don't mean a suit like this, but I'm talking, you have to go to a business meeting in a trade restaurant, you have to go traveling and and over Shabbos being, who knows, in Hong Kong or Japan or something, and being a place that's not so hospitable for Shabbos observance. Yeah, well, you know, there are questions. Sometimes we have to don the garments of Esav and be in a place that is lacking in spirituality. And sometimes you even have to look like Esav. But you must always have Kol Yaakov. Even if, well, can a Jew wear big to Esav and maintain Kol Yaakov? That's what the struggle is here. Right? And the Abarbanel says something amazing. He says that the fact that they're struggling in her womb means that there's something inherent to the relationship that there will be struggle. Can't you argue that she created the struggle by exchanging them? Maybe if they had lived out their life according to Yitzchak's plan, let Yaakov have the Birkas Avraham, let Esav have the Tal Shemayim, and it'll all be well. You with me? Right? Maybe Edom and Yaakov could have gotten along. But Rivka knows better because she bore them. She remembers that by Yisro Kitzul and Nebuchadnezzar. So Ravana says something amazing. Remember, he's writing this after the Spanish expulsion. The Inquisition is going on for 100 years. But at the expulsion in 1492, he was expelled as well. And he writes that the struggle between Yaakov and Esav is necessary to our survival. Because I witnessed Spanish Jewry trying so hard to be more Spanish than Jewish. And if you want to just substitute in that mind Spanish, American, Babylonian, Persian, Egyptian, German, and now American. Witness that late Pew study, American, right? You know what I'm talking about? So this is as if though Hashem is telling us, listen, Golos is going to be part of your experience. But if you just are treated well in the Golos, that's going to be the end of you. Right? So if you don't have that struggle between Big Day Esav and Kol Yaakov, it's the end of you. Right? The only chance to survive until... Now look, we have a state now. Can't be in place, but that state itself is trying to be more secular than anything else. But the fact is, if you want to survive, remember that struggle is part of your survival. So this back to this, is that it's, you see, it's easy to be pleasant and say please and be right, because why do you see some Jews are so gruffy? Because they have to get to Minchah, they have to make sure they finish the shiur, they only share it. They do spiritual things, and they too often forget that the person who you're cutting in line. So, of course I should cut that because I need to make some time for Mincha. I have to say Kaddish. That's more important than what that person's doing on mine. So I have to cut the line. Be careful. You're thinking Kurosh and Okeh. They're not. Right, they're second. But this is another powerful message, is that you have to have both of these. It was both of these that needed to be said by Yitzchak to convince him it's Yaakov. Right? It's very easy to be pleasant when you have no place to go. And, oh yeah, plenty of time. No problem. And it's very easy to mention God all the time if you're not you're not being pleasant and you're not we need to have the Kiddush Hashem of the say the no, the pleasant please, and the Mesiris Nefesh of Ki Kru Hashem Elokecha. That's why I think Rashi mentioned both of these as things that tipped off Yitzchak that he's talking to Yaakov and not Esav. But when Yitzchak felt the hair. There's no way that Yaakov did such a thing. Alright? Okay, finally. Yes.
Thank you. We talked about earlier about Esav bribing Yaakov when we talk about Sa'id.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a nice midah, negative midah, because by being Yaakov, we say it made him blind. By bribing Yitzchak, we say it made Yitzchak blind. And this ultimately led to Esav's downfall. Because Yitzchak was now blinded, he wasn't able to detect it was Yaakov.
If he was not blinded to this, he would have.
There would be no issue because he would know that he'd be looking right at Yaakov.
So I'll tell you that Rashi. You see, Rashi. I'm just going to give you the word of Parshanut. Rashi it gives three explanations to Batichena Inar Meros. Have you been Maris Sedri yet? But Tichena Inav Neros. Okay?
So Rashi says his eyes grew dim from seeing, and he Rashi writes, one, from the smoke of his daughters-in-law, that's the pasuk right before, that Yitzchak Esav married two women, machlas, bosmas, the son, and they're burning incense to the gods. Rashi just, you know, took the, you know, Esav had no, gave no nachas to his parents about who he chose to marry. And then he says that davar acher, it's from the smoke of the tears of the angels at the Akedas Yitzchak story. Come on, Rashi. You're a pashtan. Why don't you just say his eyes grew dim because he was old? It says the pasuk starts, "Vatichen vayiki zokein Yitzchak." Old men tend to go blind. You know that, Rashi. So look at the three words and tell me why did Rashi care to give two interpretations? And then Rashi says, "Davar Cher," to let the reader know that without this fact, there's no way Yaakov could have taken the book. Right? But look at the three words and tell me. How does Rashi understand those three words? Come on, look, there's an important Parshanun message here. See, this is the way Rashi approaches the biblical text. What does Vatzichen Einav mean?
His eyes dim.
His eyes grew dim. What does Vatzichen Einav Niraos mean?
Dim with light.
His eyes grew dim from seeing.
Sorry.
Right? Does that word add anything? You see, this, according to Rashi, cannot mean the same as this. Vatzichen Einav can't mean the same as Vatzichen Einav Meraos. So Rashi interprets Vatzichen Einav Meraos. Go ahead, close reading. His eyes grew dim. No. From seeing the smoke of. From seeing the tears of. You see, Rashi has to do something with the word Meraos. Why is it there? Someone like Rashbam will say, come on, the Torah is flowery, the Torah is repetitive, the Torah. And says different words meaning the same thing. Right? It's a structural difference between Rashi and Rashbam. We have to read it. I think this needs to be dealt with in greater depth. If it's more of a Parshanut class, I do that with you. Because sometimes Rashbam does explain a repeated terminology, giving you a new interpretation. Such as in last week's Parsha, where it says, Rivka was a besula, asher lo yada ish. She was a virgin that no man had known. Okay? What's the reason for telling me? I know what this is. You follow? So what do you have to tell me that no man had known? So Rashbam, he disagrees with what Rashi does with that, but he agrees that you have to explain Ashalo Yoda'ish as something else. Because why would the Torah explain a word that is so obviously explained? Because I know what a Vesula is. As opposed to listen to this pasuk. V'yatsaras ha-shamayim v'lo yihiyah matar. I'll stop up the heavens and there will be no rain. There Rashbam says that's just a repetitive phrase that happens hundreds of times in the Torah. Like in this week's parasha. Shnei goyim v'neich u'shnei goyim v'neich u'kavayim. No need to explain the second phrase as saying anything that the first phrase didn't say. Right? Why does it say v'yatsaras ha-shamayim v'lo yihiyah matar? Because V'yatsaras HaShemayim can mean different things. It can mean there won't be clouds. There won't be wind. So when it can mean different things, right? So comes the Torah to explain, what do I mean by V'yatsaras HaShemayim? V'lo yiyah matar. So it's just repetitive. Klomar, what did you mean by V'yatsaras HaShemayim? But I don't need three words to tell me she was a besula, and what do I mean by that? Asher lo yada'ish. That's ridiculous. Of course I know what a besula is. So when the Torah tells me something that is so patently obvious after it tells me what she was, it's got to be a reason for that. Okay, it's interesting that Rashbam knew what his grandfather wrote on that and chooses some other thing besides the Sula that she didn't engage in. I don't want to. We're on tape, so I'm not going to get into the whole nitty-gritty of it. But if you know the Rashi... but it's just so, it is a fascinating study. Why? It's so obvious what that other thing might be. Do I have to get more explicit with you? And yet Rashbam chooses the other thing to be something other than that, as if though to say, I'm not going to give the same interpretation as my grandfather.
What is Rashi's interpretation of the
Sula means she did not know a man from the normal way of knowing a man, and the other way is from a different side. So Rashbam agrees that Ashaloy Da'ish is some other thing,
But he says it was, no, you know, something less than that, some other, you know, messing around. Yes?
One other thing I was going to say was that, going back a little bit, now when we were talking about Abraham and whether or not it was a sin that he went down to Egypt and how God felt about it, I would say that when Yitzchak said he was going to go down to Egypt, go down to Plishtim, God immediately said, don't stay in the land that I've given to you and your father.
Right, you go. Yeah.
So I would say this, there's nothing wrong with what Abraham did, or God would have said something. Yitzchak had the exact same approach as Abraham did. Okay, I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to go.
I like that.
Hashem didn't react to Abraham.
Yeah, he tells Yitzchak, I don't want you to go, but he didn't tell Abraham. Okay, so why does Ramban say there's something wrong? Because Ramban says, listen, I have to be realistic with you. Is it just such an obvious coincidence that Abraham's great-great-grandchildren end up going down to Egypt and have, you know, coincidentally, so many things that relate back to Abraham that happened there? So, you know, you can't deny that Yaakov falls in love with an older sister and a younger sister and gets to marry an older sister. So you have to plug that in. Right? Those are ironies that you can't shy away from. But so that goes back to what Reb Dessler was saying, is that okay, Yaakov chose the decision he made to do that day, incorporated a lot of things, and the chips fall where they may. But if he had a chance to do it all over again, he might choose to do the same thing. Right? Okay, let's see. We see page 25 of Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. You see that there is in a few of his works on this topic, a few articles he wrote. It says slight frailties were overcome, especially in Yaakov, because Yaakov is just so much more voracious on Yaakov than on the other two. Certainly more than Yitzchak. Right? The greater the effort, the higher the madrega. Therefore, it's Muso Shel Yaakov Chakuka Al Kisei HaKavod. The Gemara says that Yaakov's face is on Hashem's Kisei HaKavod. Why Yaakov? Because that's the nation. But what would Chazal even mean by that? And this is really what full of Ancik, I didn't really give you much more information here, but here is the issue. Is that if I would give you a midah, what's Avraham's midah? What's Avraham's special midah? Chesed. What's Yaakov's special midah? It's emes. Titin emes the Yaakov, chesed l'Avraham. Yitzchak's midah is gevura. Right? Kabbalistically, and gevura means ezogim barakovish is Yitzchak, to step back from things. So, but that's precisely the point, is that in order to, when you want to create, I'm being physiological with you, when you want to create muscle tissue, what do you have to do first?
You have to destroy it first.
You have to test it.
To wear it down.
So what makes Avram the Midah of Chesed is that, you know something, he knows, he sends out a son with a canteen and a loaf of bread. He takes another son and he can lift a sword up to his head, a knife up to his head. So what, and Yaakov, whose Midah is Emes, and Kedusha and Torah, right? And Yitzchak is Avoda and Vura. You can look in the various rabbinic sources. You have the three prophets. Togibor Olam Hashem is Yitzchak, right? Avram is the first prophet, and Yaakov is Atakadosh. We have all these different representations. Three Regolim, and Yaakov is Sukkos, and Avraham is Pesach.
Why is it like that? Why is it Avraham so good?
Yeah, and that one, I admit that there are different cheshbonos even within Chazal and Mefarshim, which Av is which is related to which holiday. But all these threes that connect have them in a way where the life of that patriarch puts those things to serious tests. If you want to be that, and this, by the way, this has profound thoughts about Amunah. That what strengthens Emunah more than anything? The other side of the coin, which is really its first cousin, is doubt. All right? If you don't have any doubts ever, then your Emunah is not been broken down to be strengthened in the end. Don't break it down too far that it becomes a you know and an ability to get back to get back. Right? What do they tell you? If you're lifting weights and you're on a regimen, you have to take a day off once in a while, right? Okay? Don't break down too much. Right? That's what Soloveitchik's idea. Alright, I'm not going to do the last few. The reason why I gave you this little section here from a Jewish Observer article in 1991 was a critique of some of what Rav Shlomo Rizkin wrote about Yitzchak and about the Akedah. It's really a very harsh critique.
Was Yitzchak tested on his
Gevurah? I mean, he's looking up at his father lifting up a sword, or, you know, lifting up a knife.
Oh, that same.
He doesn't run away, or he doesn't. I mean, he allows himself to be tied up.
It was meant to be almost like Mivlasadim Avodah Torah.
Right. So if you say he's 37 at the time, and he understood what was going on, so that's more Gevurah. If he was 12 and his father started to type and said, "Dad, what are you doing? Dad, you told me that it would be a sheep. What are you doing?"
Yeah. Like, but he says, yeah, he's seeing, like, he knows what's going on.
So that's Rashi's approach. But according to Ben Ezra and Rashban, no, actually he told him, "Kim Yirelo Hasiv Lo Bani." If he's 10, 12, he's going to say, "Okay, my father told me to trust him." Right? Rashi says between the lines, he wasn't lying. He said, "Lokim yilevelo hased, lo." And if not, bini. Okay, and even the truck can suffer such an interpretation. Okay, so let's read what I wrote on page 26. Is how do we create a true role model? So Chazal on David's sins to teach about doing tshuva. You know, if you have to read as much as you can about the Indian, David Batshevi, you need to read Tehillim Perek Nun Aleph, which is a Tehillim about his feelings about. How he was changed as a result of the way the prophet rebuked him. What is to be gained by judging all actions b'kafzchus? And what is lost if we do it at all times? Right. So what the Gemara in the Avodah Zarah Daf Dalet says that David was hoping that God would just take the story of Bathsheba and put it out of Tanakh. He says no. We have to, this is again part of the breaking down the muscle tissue, remember? This helps us reach a higher madriga. And you know, this is a crucial lesson in life. Turn lemons into lemonade, you know, you ever say that? Turn Adarabah, turn these challenges and say, you know what, we're going to be better as a result of this. How? I can't think of it now. There's no way I can think of it now. No way. I'm not supposed to. I say Baruch Dynamis now. But we're going to turn this into something. You hear of the March of Dimes?
Yeah,
it saved hundreds of thousands of people. It was started by a family that had a deformed child. If you ask them straight out, was this a blessing or a curse? It was a curse when it happened. But they turned it into a blessing. It saved hundreds of thousands of lives since then, probably. And it certainly raised billions of dollars. Okay. A true role model is someone who makes us strive to achieve a higher madriga, even if we won't fully emulate the role model. We won't fully, that's back to Rav Kotler. The best Jew is the one who feels he can be a better Jew. There you go. Okay? So I told you we'd open up the brachos. Just open up a little bit right now. And now, basically, we're going, if you look back at the beginning of the Choveret, we're going to open up texts that discuss all of these characters. Okay. So today we're doing as far as all the Avos and Imahos, the small time remaining, I'm tempted do something that relates to this week's parasha.
Oh, that would be great.
Right? So let's open up to Perek Chof Hei. Okay. Veila told, Pasuk Aleph, your test. Veila told those Yitzchak and Abraham, Abraham only is Yitzchak. So this repetition caused some concern to Rashi. Why repeat this? I already know who is Abraham and Yitzchak is. So Rashi says it's to identify Yitzchak unequivocally Gracious Perk Chav Hei Pasuk Yutes. Beginning of Pasha's told us. So Rashi says it's to unequivocally associate Yitzchak with Avraham so that no one should think that possibly his father is Avimelech. He's been living with Sarah for so long, no children. As soon as she spends a little time with Avimelech, she's pregnant. So that's why the next story starts Vashem Pokad as Sarah. Not Vayifkod Hashem as Sarah. Sarah became pregnant. No, Sarah had become pregnant. That's known as the past perfect. V'ha'adam yodah es chava ishto. Not v'yedah ha'adam es chava ishto. Adam and Chava was pregnant already from before the banishment from the garden. Christianity teaches that no, she couldn't become pregnant before the original sin. That's a sin. She wouldn't have done it beforehand. And Judaism teaches nonsense. The birth, the conception preceded the sin, the birth was after, true. Nothing inherently sinful. There could be something very sinful in the act, if it's with the wrong person, a married woman, wrong time, she's neither, whatever. But if done Kedusha or Tara, there's nothing holier. Okay? Right, so however, Rashbam says, no, the reason why it says Avraham only be Yitzchak is because just a few psukim earlier, it says, Ve'ela told us Yishmael ben Avraham, Asher yolda Hagar HaMitzris. In other words, to contrast Yitzchak with Yishmael, that's why it repeats Avraham only be Yitzchak. Right? You're right, just looking at this pasuk by itself, you'd wonder, why repeat Avraham only be Yitzchak? But if you just contrast that with a few psukim earlier, where it talks about the main influence on Yishmael being Hagar, let it be known that the main influence on Yitzchak is Avraham. Vahi Yitzchak ben Abim Shana b'Kachtoris Rivka Bas Besuel Aramim Yipadan Aram Achos Levan Aramim Lo Isha. Why am I told three times in this pasuk? Three times what Rivka's background is. Right? Especially since I already know from the previous parsha where she came from. He told me a long, long story about that. So why are you telling me here? So think out of the box. Rashi says, in order to teach that, look what their background is. A father of chicanery, a brother of chicanery, from a place of chicanery. How do you say to trick, to deceive? In our parsha, Mirma, Mirma, Lomarimi, Sunni, Aram, you hear it? So place it, and you, oh boy, is Yaakov going to get it in good measure in Parshas Vayetze. Right? So, that's what Rashi says here. But I might add, maybe it's coming to give us a little background of Rivka, that you can't fool someone who was used to that. And, get this, when she has to fool someone, she's going to have some tricks up her sleeve too, and know exactly how to do it. She's going to cover all her bases. Right? Yaakov almost slips up when he says no, and Kikro Hashem Elokecha, because Yaakov teaches us a lesson. Even when we're engaged in wearing big day Asa, which means, right, tricking and doing them, whatever, things that are needed to make it out in the field, get it, the sadeh, as opposed to him who just stays in the ohel, you cannot lose your kol Yaakov. It's a powerful message, right? Okay. V'yatar yitzchok l'Hashem l'nochach ishto ki Yaakov rahi, v'yoseh lo Hashem v'tarit pa ishto. Why is he praying for her? Maybe he's the Yaakov. In fact, as I'll say so, she would have had children with another man. So why does it say that he prayed for her? He learned the lesson. I did that at the very beginning.
He learned the lesson from that.
Correct. He should have said, "Anachnu molchim arivim." And therefore, he becomes the only one of the patriarchs who doesn't have to deal with infertility by marrying another. Another powerful message. Right? Unusual word for prayer by Yetar. Chazal say there are 10 words for prayer in the Bible. Right? Vayichal, Veschanan. Right? But Vayetar, the Gemara says, is the most fervent of all.
Appeal?
It means to stick a pitchfork in that someone's ear. It means like to really, the harshest. I'm taking no for an answer. Right? Okay? This reading does require us to say l'nochach ishto means for the sake of his wife, something Rashi did not accept. And it should have said b'shvil ishto, or le ishto. L'nochach ishto, Rashi says, is a preposition of place. L'nochach means opposite his wife. Right?
What does it say in the case of Chana?
Which word? It says, Vayispalel, El Hashem, Al Hashem, and... Lifnei Hashem. Powerful message there, too, about three different ways she prayed. Gemara says, compares it to like she jumped on God's back. That's a good Rosh Hashanah message about three different ways to approach God. El Hashem, Al Hashem, Lifnei Hashem. Another time. Tell me, what would be the difference between Lama Ze Anochi and Lama Ze Li? What does Lama Ze Li mean?
What do you mean? Why are you giving this to me?
Why are you doing this to me? Why is this happening to me?
Like
Lama Ze Anochi is a more serious question. What does that mean?
My destiny.
Yeah, well, it's like a Hamlet kind of question. Why am I? Why do I exist even to suffer like this? The point is that Rashi understood this to mean there's something extraordinary going on here that no other woman ever experienced. This is a unique situation. You don't think that Sarah, a good 60, 70 years older than this woman, didn't have similar pains even with one child? Right? So it's not so much a question, why was this so unusual? No. Let's read Rashi and see what the real question is. Al korcha hamikra hazeh amir doshuni. Really? You're forced to say it against your will because most people will to read the Torah with pshat, but on this pasuk, no, you can't. Right? Shistam mahi retzitza zu because of imkain lamazeh anochi. What's this retzitza? What's this struggle? Unborn babies can struggle. His grandson said, "Yeah, absolutely true." Hayu v'snanin b'soch me'el k'derech u'brim. Of course they can. They're jockeying for space. You ever hear a statistic that there are many, many more twins conceived than born?
Oh yeah, one like usually takes out the nourishment.
It kills the other.
Yeah. It's really sad.
Something that doesn't happen with animals as much, but with humans, one kills the other. How? They don't really know what they're doing, but there are two eggs now, so they're starting to grow, and they're jockeying for space and nutrients that are usually there for one. The woman doesn't even know she's pregnant yet. She certainly doesn't know she's carrying two. But she's got to do things that lead a healthy lifestyle that makes sure that these kids have enough oxygen, you know, right? And of late, especially with unhealthy behavior, not getting enough sleep, smoking, drinking, and other things like that, destroy one of them, possibly both of them. And then she doesn't even realize she was pregnant. So the idea of babies struggling inside their mother is a very common thing. Mom struggling. You get back here. I want to come out first. But this is unusual. This is more than that. So Rashbam, who gives good pshat, kiderech. Kiderech is an important word for Rashbam. Derech eretz is like, that's the way things are. We have to say al korcha chamikra zeh minushuni. Not so much why this struggle is happening, but why did the Torah care enough to record it? You don't think Sarah suffered from a pregnancy? Of course she did. Betzer Tel Dibonim, 90 years or 89 years old. But the Torah didn't give her an editorial about what it felt like because it wasn't like this. This is something more unusual. Right? That's what we're talking about here. And we talked earlier about this inevitable struggle because this is something no other woman ever experienced. Yes?
Did Sarah or Rachel appeal to Hashem? Like, go to Hashem for help?
We don't see anything that's written in the text. Like, you're asking me in the Midrash.
That'd be another reason for why.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're praying, and then all of a sudden, but the Droshes Hashem either means for an oracle, prophecy, or just to pray. Right? When it says Batelech, that might have meant, why didn't it just say Batidroshes Hashem? Batelech Droshes Hashem means that she went to Hashem Be'er, Rabbi Nelson says she went to Abraham. Why should it go to the wrong husband? I'm not sure.
I'm saying this could be another reason why Yitzchak didn't have to pay another woman to give birth. She went to God personally, as opposed to Sodom.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so v'emar Hashem lo shnei goyim v'vineich v'shnei v'vimeach v'reid v'lam yilam v'imatz rav yavot zir. How do we understand those three words, v'rav yavot zir, is crucial to what we're going to start to do the next class. Which is, I'll leave you with this question, all right, for next class. Is it possible that Yitzchak was aware of these words, and yet would choose to give the bracha he ended up giving to Yaakov. I'm sorry, to Esau.
You know what I'm saying? Did Rivka ever share this message with her husband? So I want you to apply just derech eretz. That means if you were Rivka, would you rush home that day and tell Yitzchok, Yitzchok, just get it. First of all, guess what? I'm carrying too! Surely she would share that beautiful information with him. No! Alright, the fact is that when Abraham was told that Sarah would give birth, I don't see that he runs home to tell him. How do you know?
She hears it.
She hears it from the guy behind the curtain and she's not aware of it. She just thinks it's another one of those brachas that the guys hand out when they after they get a free meal from my husband. So we have to talk. That doesn't mean don't impose your ideas and modes of communication to people 3,500 years ago. Just because a man says Ma'arish, Hoshi, Kemach, Arishi, Vasi, Ugos, doesn't mean that they have a strained relationship. That's the way they spoke. Adrabi, you can see that she's so with the program, and he feels so comfortable talking to her this way that might be something that you might not speak today that way, but things are different. All right. Anyway, that's.